Welcome back, everybody. We have a very long pod for you. We have a couple pods actually coming out. We're sprinkling the recording throughout the week. Crazy travel schedules, fires down in LA, this and that. Anyways, I won't hold you up any further. We cover the divisional round on this one. Now we know who's in the conference championships for the NFL. We do an update with some coaching hires as well. We cover the national championship. Jason's team didn't make it, but it's okay. So we'll talk about that. And I think that's about it. So don't go away. Let's get to it. All right, let's recap. Ohio State, newly minted champions. Big win this past Monday. We're finally getting around to it. Final score, 34-23. How do we get there? It was pretty much a pretty good game in the first quarter. Would you guys say pretty close? Evenly matched. Notre Dame opened up with an impressive drive. Unfortunately, it seemed like they kind of ran their quarterback out of gas like really quickly. There was reports that he was storing up right after that first drive. He had like about what, like four or five, you know, quarterback draws or the option to keep it.
Nine total carries nine on total. That drive.
Took some big hits. I know he converted on two of them. There was one on a fourth and three, and then he also kept it for the touchdown. 18 plays, the longest in BCS playoff history. Things are looking good. Jason's probably pretty stoked at this point. Ohio State responds. Surprisingly, they had a pretty even attack, pass and run, and Jeremiah Smith gets the touchdown, 8 yards out, 7-7. Ohio State gets the ball back again. Defense steps up. And Notre Dame has a three now, I believe. Judkins had like this crazy stiff arm, and he had a 9-yard rushing touchdown. It was pretty epic. 76 yards in 6 minutes. All these drives in the first half were like milking the clock. So you're thinking like, all right, this is a really good heavyweight match. You know, down a touchdown, not a big deal. Well, it was a big deal because Ohio State didn't let up pretty much after that. Jenkins had a really big 70-yard burst. I believe that was after the half. Ohio State, rather, is up 28-7. And now Jason's probably like, what the hell is going on? This is bullshit. Probably throwing his Notre Dame hat t-shirt. I don't know what you do, man. I got to see you upset one of these days. But first quarter, great. Fourth quarter, 5 minutes of that, it was action-packed as well. Notre Dame had some fight. Thank God. And if I had the game hitting 50 points, I believe we made good on that. Ohio State, you know, what kind of started that run for Notre Dame is I believe they fumbled. It was right after the announcer said, Ohio State doesn't fumble, only five fumbles lost all year long. Right on cue. It's like a jinx, man. It always happens on TV.
See, they know the script. They're just giving you that tease, and then bam, there it is.
You knew it was going to happen. I'm like, oh, man, I hate when they do that. It's going to happen now. Bam, fumbled. Notre Dame recovers. Jason got blood pumping through his veins. He's excited. There's a chance. Are you saying there's a chance? There's a chance. Evans had a really great catch, just dodging some defenders for this big 29-yard catch to convert on like a third and long. And then I can't remember what happened. It was like a really big, 30-yard touchdown pass on the left side. Do you go for two? They go for two. They convert on this really cool trick play. We got ourselves a game, 31-23. You know, Ohio State got really concerted. It almost looked like the play calling from the Michigan game. And I'm thinking like, dude, do they want to lose this game? Do they want to lose it? Because they're giving Notre Dame a chance to come back in it. But we end it 34-23. Would you say it's an ass whooping or just like a complete performance or a dominant performance from Ohio State peaking at the right time in the right place in the right year and giving Ryan Day at least another 6 weeks before his fans want to fire him if he doesn't beat Michigan again?
Yeah, I mean, Ohio State, I mean, Ryan Day, I mean, great win for him, obviously. I mean, I believe I saw something, you know, police had been outside his family home since that loss to Michigan or right afterwards. So give credit to them for stepping up.
Are you being serious or are you not?
No, that is serious.
Really?
Yeah, from what I heard, yeah.
Like people are crazy.
He had some kind of security or police outside his home for, I don't know, for a few weeks or maybe still after that loss to Michigan. So, yeah, definitely serious thing. I mean, you know, it was, I think they brought it up, or at least Herb Street did before the Tennessee game, that there were some fans, true or not, that would rather them beat Michigan than win an actual national title, which
I believe
is crazy.
It's true.
But I do believe that's true.
I believe that's true.
What percentage? I don't know. But
I'll say 60-40.
I don't think it's that high, but I mean, I'm sure now that Ryan Day's won that title, something they haven't won since 2014, is definitely going to be a big monkey off their back. But yeah, Ohio State, Rome, you said it, just regrouped from the Michigan loss, and they were peaking at the right time. I mean, we came in to this game, all of us in agreement, that Ohio State for the last 2-3 weeks had been the best team in the playoff. Doesn't come as a surprise that they won. I'm not surprised how they won. I mean, we know Notre Dame was going to fight, and that's what Notre Dame did. That's what they've been about all season. They came back, made it a game. You know, they get that stop there, and Jeremiah Smith doesn't get that big third down conversion. Who knows? All the momentum's their way. Even Ohio State admitted after the game, like, hey, we're a little nervous. Like, they had the momentum. But, yeah, big win. Big win for Ohio State for sure.
Things look kind of shaky, too, when Freeman decided to kick, you know, go for the field goal. They kick it. It's a gimme, 20 yards out. Doink. I'm like, what the hell is going on? Jason, how did you feel at that moment in time? Or give us your breakdown, man. It's your team. How do you feel? You feel happy? It's a good season.
Yeah, I guess we're long into the podcast and I haven't said a word yet. So, yeah, if you would have said at the beginning of the season to any Notre Dame fan that you're going to make the national championship game and you're going to lose, would you accept that? And I think pretty much everyone at the beginning of the season would have accepted that. And now if you would have said it after the Northern Illinois loss, this is going to end up, I think anyone would have taken that result too after losing to Northern Illinois. And, you know, that was basically Notre Dame's resume the entire year. It's like, yeah, they're good, but they lost to Northern Illinois. And then the heck of a run in the playoffs and who they beat to get here. We all talked about it in the kind of in the Final Four and in the preview. Like, Ohio State just had the horses just at every level. They did. So Notre Dame needed to be almost absolute perfect. The first, you talk about my highs throughout the game, Rome. So I texted you guys to the first quarter, like, this is exactly how Notre Dame could win this game. Like, it was pretty much the entire first quarter just on ice. Like, what was it, 18 plays, Aaron, or something in that first
18
drive?
18 plays, yes.
Just 18 plays, Malkin, the entire clock, and, you know, putting up a touchdown, up 7-0. Okay, this is exactly, you know, how Notre Dame is going to need to do this. Hey, we're going to slow the game down, but still score the points. But that was really the entire, that was the high of the entire first half. And then it was just an onslaught from Ohio State, and the defense just didn't have the answers, because anytime, hey, it was going to be third and short, or it was going to be an easy second down conversion, and Ohio State was just having their way against different parts of the Notre Dame defense, which hadn't been in any really game this year. And we talked about it, were some of the key matchups. I talked about the Ohio State running backs versus the linebackers of Notre Dame. And when these guys were getting past the D-line to that second level, that's where these yards just became easy. And, you know, that was setting up the play action where it was just easy completions in the mid-range. Like, it didn't look like Notre Dame could stop Ohio State at all. And they didn't for the entire first half. So, you know, when you're ending the half down 21-7, but at that point, I'm like, man, this game's lost. I don't know how it could be. Ohio State's getting the ball to start the second half. You know, they end up scoring. Notre Dame turns it over on downs, you know, going up 31-7. Like, pretty much you're kind of like, okay, it's over. Notre Dame gave the life. Once they scored the touchdown, I'm like, all right, well, it's respectable at least, because, you know, I was around a bunch of Notre Dame fans watching this game, and we're like, all right, well, we got to keep it respectable, because the last national championship versus Alabama, that was the big joke, is they got blown out. It wasn't respectful. Now you're talking about program building, and you don't want to be embarrassed on national TV. So, hey, you're down 31-15. Great. The Ohio State fumble you're talking about. Okay, that was when I was like, oh, man, there's like a chance here at this point. You score a touchdown here. It could be like a one-possession game. And then just deflated when Mitch Cheater misses the field goal. And a bunch of the people I'm around and text him, like, why is Marcus Freeman going, you know, for the field goal? Why isn't he going for it at this point in the game? I think I got why he was kicking the field goal, because it was fourth and goal, and it wasn't a close fourth and goal either. It was a long play. So, hey, get me points, which, you know, puts on the board. There was still some time left, but missing the field goal, getting no points out of that. Ohio State then punting and Notre Dame getting the chance to score. You're still feeling it.
And yeah, it was the first punt, like 6 minutes left in the game. They finally punt.
Yeah, so you're thinking, you know, starting the half, Ohio State scores a touchdown on their first drive, then get a field goal, but then they fumble and punt, and you're like, man, we're there. Now we just need, you know, a stop at that point, and it just wasn't happening. And Jeremiah Smith just, you felt it was going to happen at a certain point. Like, we're just cramming the line of scrimmage, and
oh, man.
Will Howard's able just to throw it up and just go one-on-one and make
it
the
play. Beautiful.
And that, it's going to be crazy that guy has another 2 years of college in front of him. But, you know, that's really was kind of the difference of the game. And Notre Dame's offense, you know, for the second and third quarter, for the most part, was just non-existent. I think when they got getting going, Riley Leonard, you know, made some throws here and there, but it just was too little too late. You can't put yourself in that deficit. And just the overall, like, obviously a disappointment. But again, you go at the start of the season, you're saying, hey, Notre Dame's going to go to the national championship game. They're going to win, you know, multiple games in this playoff to get rid of that. I think you see that as a successful season. And this is a launching pad for potentially Notre Dame down the road, you know, as a team that could be a national contender, you know, get the top recruits. But Ohio State, man, they just, since that Michigan loss, and we talked through all of it, like, they've just been really just unstoppable, and they just really plowed through really everyone on their way. And thinking about that team.
So I was thinking, like, imagine, man, like, I was really happy Michigan beat Ohio State, but it kind of screwed my Texas team, because if they don't beat Ohio State plays in the conference championship, who knows what happens? Injuries, they can be a little more tired. They definitely don't go on like this run, because it's that adversity of losing to Michigan, like feeling like shit about yourself. And then, you know, Texas is the championship. There's a good chance that happens. Crazy how everything panned out.
Well, Rome, you don't have to wait too long as they open the season next year.
Yeah. Game one? Is it
game
week
one?
Yep.
That sucks, dude. That's a really shitty opener right there.
It's a lot of big openers to start the year. Four marquee matchups to start
already?
Week one next year.
Oh, man, it's going to be a disappointment already. One thing I didn't like about the Notre Dame in the fourth quarter, it just felt like when they were trying to pull out that hole after that missed field goal, one of the drives, it just seemed like they were just taking so much time just milking the clock. The clock was just ticking, talking. I think it was like 6.5 minutes left, and they waste like 3 minutes on one of those drives, like 3 minute plus. And it just reminded me of the Minnesota Vikings, so how it kind of looked like they were just mailing it in. I know Notre Dame wasn't, but it looked like they were kind of like uneasy about what the play calling was or what to do. And I don't know, I kind of felt like it bit them in the ass a little bit.
Yeah, that was the missed field goal drive, because I think that drive was over 5 minutes. But at that point in the game, they really hadn't done that. They scored the second touchdown, and that was probably the most momentum they probably went through. So they could have gone no huddle, but like it was rough for them just gaining any yards down the field.
Yeah.
And like the passing game, you know, it was not Notre Dame's strength. It was the running game. We didn't see a ton or if any from an explosive plays from the running backs. It was Riley Leonard. You know, you mentioned it earlier, Rome. It was
great
him.
Game.
It was him trying to do it with his legs at a lot of points, and Ohio State was wiser to that. They're still gaining yards, but it wasn't explosive. It was a rough 5 yards that just took every ounce of energy out of Riley Leonard. So yeah, I could agree with you on that, but I think they weren't doing much to that point, but it was a lot of time. And then when it kind of just ended on, we're going to attempt a field goal and miss it, really kind of, it really just took the sails out
the
of really everything at
the
moment.
The way it was like square. It just stopped rotating. It was like a video game. Boink. I thought it was fake. I thought it was like AI. Couldn't believe it. I'm not even a Notre Dame fan. I just couldn't believe it. I'm like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah, I mean, go ahead.
No, I was saying, the people I was around and texting me, I mentioned earlier, like before it even was getting kicked, they're like, why is he kicking this ball? Why? So like it was already a bad vibe around where I was at of why he was even going, decided to kick the field goal and not trying to score at that point. But like I said earlier, like, man, like they were at the 9 yard line or something like that. Like it wasn't an easily makeable like fourth and goal. They're gonna really push the envelope. So it was an in between call, but just it didn't feel good just from the decision. And then
yeah, I remember someone asked me, I was watching with that. It was actually a couple of Notre Dame fans there. And they're like, do you go for it or kick the field goal? I'm like, this is kind of tricky. It's like a weird point of the game. I say kick the field goal. It's easy, but you're right there. You better go for broke. You're already down 2 scores. I think it was like, you know, what, 16 points or
yeah,
what
I mean,
it was?
They were stuck in the middle because there's 9 minutes to go in the game.
Yeah.
Like Jason mentioned, they're at the 9 yard line. Ohio State has the best red zone defense in the nation. They've been dominant in this playoff.
Yeah.
I mean, it took Notre Dame, what, 6 plays just to get it in a touchdown the first drive inside the 10. So I get it. I mean, they already ran 3 plays from the 10 and only got 1 yard. So Freeman doing the numbers. Are you going to get a touchdown when they got 8 guys dropped in coverage? Likely no. Take the 3 points. You're still going to need 2 touchdowns regardless. Now you don't need the 2-point conversions. They miss it. And then obviously Ohio State gets another first down, takes about 3-4 minutes off, punts away. And then Notre Dame does what they do. But I mean, Jason, when we talked about key factors to win the game, time of possession was one thing Jason mentioned. Notre Dame lost that.
Yeah.
Turnovers, they got the one, but wasn't, you know, a significant impact in the game. And then big plays that I mentioned, Ohio State had multiple big plays. Notre Dame finally got big plays late. I said they needed about 6 plays over 20 yards. They got 4 of them on those 2 touchdown drives late to get back in the game, but by then it was too little, too late. So, I mean, that really, I mean, if Notre Dame, I mean, the first drive was any indication of how the rest of the game would have went, it would look like it was going to be a low-scoring under. Rome, you said you'd like 35-28 or something, which I thought was pretty crazy. And then after that first drive, I'm like, man, this game's going on the under total easy. I mean, 10-minute drive, then Ohio State, 6-minute drive. But Ohio State, first 4 drives, all touchdowns, pretty similar to what they did against Tennessee and Oregon.
Yeah.
Texas, obviously, they struggled to score points. But overall, it was a pretty good game. I think Notre Dame definitely was competitive. Even though it was 31-7, it didn't feel like they were getting whipped. Like, you know, you asked, was it an ass whipping or not? I don't think it was. I mean, Ohio State backers are real happy because they almost got backdoored on that -8, -8.5, -9, whatever it closed at. So,
yeah,
Ohio State backers are real happy to come out on top for sure. That would have been a bad beat to end the year.
Yeah, you mentioned keys to win the game. We're talking about like running the ball and controlling the clock for Notre Dame. That's what Ohio State did. They used receivers, but not as much as we thought they did. They ran the ball with their two-headed monster, and I thought it was a little too conservative at the end, but give credit where it's due, man. They built the shit out of that clock all game. It was fun. And it wasn't. And it was fun. It was a good championship. It was one that, man, like, honestly, we would have never got, obviously, without the playoffs. So it was kind of fun. And with the whole new playoff setup, honestly, like, what, 4 teams could have realistically won this thing? You know, it was great. You know, I could definitely see Penn State was really close to even making it this far, too, you know? So Penn State,
you got,
Texas.
You got 6 teams, really.
6 teams. Oregon.
I mean,
if
Georgia,
they didn't come out like...
Georgia, obviously, losing back was big. I mean, if he's healthy, did they get by Notre Dame? We'll never know. But that would have been a really, really good game. Still was.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Oregon. You know, I believe Jason and your guys is both preseason picked to win the national title. If they don't play Ohio State, they're likely going to win at least 1, maybe 2 playoff games.
Yeah.
So, just bad luck of the draw for them, really.
Last time Ohio State won the Natty was when they expanded to a 4-playoff team format in 2014, and they're the first team to win it in a 12-team format in 2024-25. So, hey, first-year luck for them.
First-year luck, but I had technical difficulties just talking about the future for them when you look at the players they got coming back. I mean, this is a loaded young team with talent. I guess getting past Michigan is going to be their only thing, you know, and a way too early preview right now, but this is going to be a really dangerous team. And you're thinking about next year in the Big Ten. You know, they're going to be probably be preseason favorites. They're going to have this big game to start the season. I think lessons learned as you look at the first playoff, all of the teams that got the bye unsuccessful, kind of in that first one. So what are those teams going to take away next year that potentially get that first round bye, and how things shake out and to play out for the long playoff? Because it was a long, arduous thing. I think Notre Dame going into it obviously had the injuries that were much more piling up. Ohio State was a little bit of a fresher team. I think they had the edge regardless, but I mean, there was a lot of things for Notre Dame that they were continuously overcoming through every round, where they were losing, you know, some key guys or guys were busted up. You know, think people weren't at 100%. So I think there's a lot to take away from this first season with the playoff, but at the same time, like, yeah, Ohio State's going to be back. Everything okay now in San Francisco room?
As soon as Jason mentioned Notre Dame banged up, yeah, brought the ambulance.
Bring out the Kirby, man.
You know, there's a part of me that I'm kind of ready to kind of just go on the outskirts of the city now. I think I'm ready.
I think overall, if you look at the 2024-2025 college football season, like, you know, I kind of talked about it. For me personally, it was like one of the most engaging seasons to date in a long time, because, man, there was this drama all season where you really, the people complaining about the playoff is like, oh, like, you know, Notre Dame lost Illinois or Northern Illinois, that's a disqualifier. Ohio State losing to Michigan, that's a disqualifier. Like,
we thought
teams,
it was.
Yeah, but these teams wouldn't have won the national, but they get proven, like, hey, you could have a loss during the regular season, still make it, go on a run. And, you know, besides, you know, Oregon, there wasn't a team without a blemish on their record. But then they get in the playoffs, and hey, they go against an Ohio State team that they got to prove it again, you know, for a second time, and, you know, just got destroyed. So I think there's merit to, there's a lot of value in the regular season. You know, do you have to go undefeated? No, you don't have to. You can bounce back and get there. But there is something to the resumes you're putting up throughout the year that could make your path a little easier, a little harder when it came to this playoff, and set yourself up right to be able to win the national championship. So I still like the expanse of the playoff. Everyone complained after the first round of the college football playoff. I was making the jokes to you guys, the NFL playoff, there was all blowouts first weekend the same way too, but no one's talking about the committee to the NFL based on that. So it'll even out. And I think some things will, you know, be different, you know, the top to bottom of the competitive of the conference will be different. But man, you think about that, like, Arizona State game where everyone was kind of clouding them, and they made that exciting where they could have taken it to the next level. So there was just some really great stuff in that playoff. And, you know, I even thinking back to that first round, as much as the blowouts were, Notre Dame, Indiana kicking that off, the atmosphere and everything about that game in December in South Bend, night game. Like, there's just some really cool things about all the positives you can take away off this first playoff season.
Yeah, big thing. Big Ten wins the championship back to back. First time that's happened for them, and I think the SEC was doing that for a while. So you gotta imagine they probably have what, maybe four or five teams that can compete for a championship for the next few years. Big 12 has a few guys that can make some noise. We'll see how the SEC does. You imagine the ACC is gonna rebound as well. A few things I would change about the playoff: I would like to just see them get like the top four teams, you know, the bye week. Shrink the postseason down a little bit so it's not as many, you know, off weeks from the end of the regular season to the beginning. I think Joel Klatt had a pretty good argument on it, and he's been vocal on X, and it makes a lot of sense, actually, kind of condense it a little bit and have less interference with the NFL playoffs. And then if you want to do like the NFL, where you give the division winners a home field, even if they don't have the better record, give whoever's on the top four who won their conference the home field, at least for like the first round, right? I think that'd be kind of cool to see.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple things. I mean, I think overall it was a success the first year of the expanded 12-team playoff. There's a lot of tweaking that, you know, I think they already had a phone conversation, all the school presidents and boards and conference.
Yeah,
seating. They're going to meet again. And I believe big changes probably are coming around 2026, because that's when the SEC and the Big Ten basically take control and ownership of the college football playoff. They gain the majority, so they're going to set the rules. And that's where you might see expansion from 12 to 14 to 16, where likely you get, you know, 6 to 8 teams from those two conferences combined in. I agree. I mean, reseeding 1 through 4, the best teams. I would like to see not only just the first round, but that's the quarterfinal rounds, the host team, the better seed team host playoff games, as you mentioned. As far as moving scheduling up and stuff, I mean, I think, Rome, we talked about it. You got midterm finals and stuff for kids. They don't want to play so many games as well because of, you know, safety, academics, injury and stuff. But Ohio State, I think, benefited a lot from not playing in that Big Ten title game. That gave them an extra week to regroup. Texas had to battle Georgia and then go through Clemson and then Arizona State. So for them, doing what they had to do, that was great. And like Jason mentioned, the expanded playoff, you don't have to go perfect. And that's why next year we get 4 great games to open the season. Texas, Ohio State, arguably going to be 1 and 2 preseason poll. LSU, Clemson, Miami versus Jason's Notre Dame. Ooh. Alabama, Florida State. These are huge games to start the season. No one's worried about losing the game because, hey, you've got room to develop as the season goes on, like you saw with Notre Dame losing to Northern Illinois. But, hey, they beat a good Louisville team. They beat a good Georgia Tech team. Those teams proved to be good and benefited them in the run in the playoff, too.
Yeah, I hated that argument. It was around one of the playoffs. It was, you know, all the SEC homers about, like, oh, we're just not going to schedule any difficult out-of-conference games because, you know, you just got to go undefeated. I'm like, well, the SEC teams, for the most part, don't schedule any aggressive out-of-conference teams where, you know, Miami every year schedules a big out-of-conference game, you know, to their credit. There's a couple other, you know, non-SEC schools that are like that. I guess Alabama went and played Wisconsin, but, hey, you were really going out and scheduling the cream of the crop of another, like, Power 5 conference. So, yeah, I mean, college football just much better in this playoff era if you're going to go out and play some of these big games and stuff. To me, that's just a much better resume builder if, hey, you know, Notre Dame and Miami go out and play, and hey, that turns into, like, an impressive loss. And whether you're looking at, hey, it's 1, 2, 3 lost teams that you're looking at in that, you know, 10 to 14 ranking in the college football playoffs, but you went out and actually played competitive outside games. Like, to me, that sticks more into where the resume we're at. You know, Texas, to their credit, them versus Michigan, you know, should have been a bigger deal on their resume. It just didn't turn out that way. But, you know, that's the type of games we want to see in college football. Like, we don't need to schedule, like, Eastern Alabama or, you know, what other university of a Division II and III just to get a warm-up game.
Yeah, I think they should take away the scheduling away from the athletic directors and have that more of like a centralized thing over like a committee of some sort, just like any other sports league where it's already programmed. You have to face so many in your conference, a few from like maybe 1 year you face more from the ACC, maybe the next year you face more of the Big 12. I don't know, kind of like a rotating thing, much like the NFL.
I think we could get there. The problem is, if you actually look at these teams, most of these schedules are already like 5-10 years in advance, a lot of these games.
About 3 or 4 at least, yeah.
That's the big thing, too. I mean, I know looking at Florida State's schedule, they've got Bama home and away. They've got Georgia home and away over the next 4 years. You know, Texas got Ohio State. I'm guessing Ohio State's probably going to do a return trip back to Austin sometime in the next few years. So a lot of these games are already scheduled. And then, you know, you do get the games that the SEC basically leaves open for, you know, Eastern Washington or Colgate or somebody to slip in there and get beat 60-0 late November before, you know, rivalry week.
Yeah.
The tough part with that, Roman, especially with these teams within the conference, is that they get whatever conference games the conference is dictating to them. But it's always going to be unbalanced, especially with them getting rid of divisions and stuff like that. That's how you look at Indiana's schedule and like, okay, great. You only played, you know, one team really in their like top echelon throughout the season and then didn't have to play in the conference championship game. Like every season, potentially, you could have one of those teams in a big conference that basically misses almost all of the tough teams within their conference and goes 11-1. Like the feasibility
is Texas. Just say we're talking about Texas.
You guys are haters, man.
I mean, yeah.
It's all right. It was true.
It was true there. I mean, Indiana, like a lot of those teams you can talk through. So, I mean,
Indiana was still pretty good.
Indiana was still good, and you give them a lot of credit in their first year in that. It's just it will be challenging because these schedules are so imbalanced, and that's where you're really looking at kind of the resumes. a lot of people talk about the ranking at the start of the season as always like the worst part because it gives them these preconceived notions on where, you know,
like
teams are ranked.
Good.
Yeah, because it's like, you know,
Florida State.
I mean, it's a perfect, or, you know, whoever you start number one, if you're giving Georgia number one to start the season, or you're giving Texas number one to start the season, and like, hey, they're not that impressive, but they just hang in the top five or top two because, oh, they were preseason ranked, and it doesn't allow the teams to go up. Like, I don't think they ever get rid of it because I think it's something easy to sell on TV where number one faces number five in week two or something like that. But that's always like a preconceived notion on preseason rankings when, hey, we really don't know what these teams for the most part are going to look like at the end of the season. Cause I'd really like you to compare the top 25 to start the season versus kind of what that playoff looked like. And it wasn't anywhere really close to how these teams are ranked.
Let's end it here where they finally released the final AP rankings, which I totally forgot they did that cause it's been like a few weeks. So, they put Ohio State one, obviously. Unanimous consensus, Notre Dame 2, Oregon number 3. That was kind of like a shock to me. In the season, if you get like blown out like that, like the way they did, you're dropping 3 or 4 spots. I would actually have Texas number 3. You can argue Oregon drops down to number 4 or put Penn State there, 4 or 5. Then the rest, I would put Arizona at 6 versus Georgia. Georgia at 7, and then the rest, you know, Boise State, Tennessee, Indiana. I really don't have any opinions about any of that. Thoughts on the final poll?
I mean, I don't have an issue with the final poll. I mean, Oregon, you want to swap them with Texas, that's fine, but they did beat the national champion Ohio State in the regular season, only lost one game. I think the top 4 is fine. I think I'm good with that. And Georgia's there, Penn State, Boise State is staying ahead of both a Big Ten and the SEC school. But I don't really have a big problem with the final top 10, top 4, top 5. I mean, the 1 and 2, that's kind of what you wanted. And yeah. Ohio State was 1 and Notre Dame 2.
Great. Any final thoughts on the championship game? I don't want to open Pandora's box for you guys.
No, I again... I said in the final 4 week, Ohio State was the best out of that final four. Ohio State was the best out of the final four. It pained me not to pick Notre Dame. I think both of you guys looked at me sideways when I didn't pick Notre Dame. It hurt with every ounce of being. I was going for a little reverse jinx, I'm not going to lie. Really thought Notre Dame was going to cover. They were looking good to cover there, you know, towards the end. But Ohio State with a nice little field goal to end that backdoor cover. But, I mean, impressive year for Notre Dame. Again, I think if you say you're going to, you know, get into the playoff, make a run, go to the national title, it's great. And Ohio State, you know, at the end of that Michigan loss, where were they going to be and able to make this run and sets himself up nicely for the next part of the regular season. So, but you start a new college season next year, you're going to have different players, different breakouts, and I think it'll be an entirely different look to what we're looking at from a playoff a year from now.
Good stuff. Ohio State, national champs, Ryan Day, Chip Kelly, national champ for the first time in his long storied collegiate career. Collegiate career. Good stuff, guys. Let's recap the divisional round in the NFL. We're a few days out. Lots of things have happened. Coaching hires, et cetera, et cetera. We know Jason's excited to talk that. We'll give him his 2 cents or his 2 minutes to say what he got to say. But in the meantime,
I only get 2 minutes, man. I got a whole like 30 minutes lined up. What are you talking about?
Better get those quarters ready, Jason, because if all you guys 2 cents, you're getting like 30 seconds based off Rome's running the show.
I don't know. We should have got the overreaction Monday, Rome promised, where I can just start talking straight 30 minutes on Ben Johnson.
Yeah, maybe it's a good thing we waited. I don't know. Well, we know who's in the conference championship now. Chiefs, Bills, Eagles, Commanders, and a big shock. We're always due for a few upsets, and there was definitely going to be one in this round as well. I was kind of hoping it was going to be the Texans, and I thought they played great. I thought they had a great chance to do it. Let's start there. They lose 23-14 with a very suspicious safety to end the game. so spreads are covered. Not a fan of it, but CJ Stroud, pretty decent game. Mixon, Bald, Collins as well. Kelce, they brought the old 1981 Ferrari out of the shed. All original OEM, original tires. Looks slow. They changed the oil, and goddamn, he was so fast. Not really fast. He was in slow motion, man. Every time he caught the ball, it looked like he was running in slow motion for a good 10, 20 yards. He ended up with a 110-plus and a touchdown, 7 catches. Mahomes getting the ref calls that they get. If you guys want to talk about that, we can. But I thought this was a great game. It was pretty tightly contested. A little funky in the first half, actually. It just seemed like it was like a little slow moving. Not a lot of points being scored. Houston answers with a 13-yard run touchdown. They missed the extra kick. These extra kicks, man, end up adding up towards the end of the game, kicking you in the ass where you have to go for two, et cetera, et cetera. Changes the way you manage the game. Kelce gets a big catch in the fourth quarter. They extend the lead 20-12. It should be 20-13. I think there was a missed field goal in there as well that could have
blocked field goal. Yeah.
Blocked field goal that could have made that deficit a little shorter. And then we have a couple scores in the fourth, including that safety that gave us the final result, 23-14. There was a few, I thought, a few like the roughing the passer or whatever it was. I was okay with one. 15 yards is a lot, man. And they were like on like third and short or whatever it was, or third and long. It just extended scoring drives, and it really changed the game. And without those things, I know Houston could have did some things better. They got more yardage, more passing yards, more rushing. They definitely dominated. They got more yards per play. You would have thought, if you're looking at the stats, they win the game. All right. And they did have like some costly self-inflicted wounds. It seems like KC just always pulls out these victories, and they look good doing it. Aaron, since you said that they weren't going to win a game this postseason, let's start with you. What are your thoughts on the game, and especially those roughing the passer calls?
Well, I'm going to not say anything about the referees. I don't want to get fined here by the NFL, so I'm just going to be quiet on that front. Let the tape speak for itself. Yeah, I mean, Rob, you said it. I mean, all the stats favor the Texans. Time of possession, first down, rushing, passing, total yardage. They got 124 more total yards. So the discrepancy really in the game, sacks.
KC
got eight.
Yeah, that was
really
big.
So imagine how many drives are getting shut down. I mean, basically a sack is kind of almost the same as a turnover. It ends drives and usually forces you to punt. And then penalties. This is where the Chiefs are so good. They don't get penalized. 4 penalties for 29 yards.
Well,
Texans double the penalties over 3 times the yards, pretty much. Those are the little things the Chiefs do good. And then, like you said, Travis Kelce, he comes out, and he's almost playing like a rope-a-dope. He comes out, looks slow, and then boom, he puts his foot in the ground, and he gets separation, and he's really good at it. And he knows where to find soft spots in man-to-man and zone. And once he puts his foot in his ground, he like explodes on you. And he's just like, whoa, this guy's a lot quicker than I thought. And then he makes big catches. I mean, the Chiefs have been doing it all year. Where, like you said, we look at the box score, and I think they changed jerseys with the Texans, because I would have thought the Texans were the Chiefs and won the game, like you mentioned, but they didn't. This is what they are. I mean, if you look at probably the box score for half the wins for the Chiefs this year, you would have thought they lost the game. But they keep finding ways to win, man. They just do.
Yeah, great point on the time possession. One stat I remember they were talking about, I think Texans were the first team to lose a playoff game where they outran, got like more yards, more passing, et cetera, and no turnovers. First time that that's happened where you actually lose even time possession. Penalties were big. The sacks were big. They killed it on third down efficiency, 10 of 17. You'd think like, man, they should be going on to the next round.
Yeah, Aaron nailed it. I think the only thing missing there, you talked about the block field goal, but there was a missed field goal too. So, you know, Jaime Fairbairn going 2 for 4 versus Harrison Butker going 3 for 3. You know, those are those things in the playoffs that come, you know, that come to bite you when you're not putting points on the board and just take some wild swings and momentum in the game where the Chiefs are just so good. You got to be perfect to beat them because, hey, Bucker's going to make the kicks. You know, they're going to convert it. Kelsey's always going to, you know, the rope-a-dope. Aaron's a great analogy. You know, it just looks like he's running in slow motion, but he's going to box you out, get the ball, and then it's going to turn into a massive play that gets him down into the red zone. So, yeah, it's the way the Chiefs have been all year. Rome's had them not in the top five or below the top five or whatever it's happening.
In the top five, dude.
Okay. Well, I mean, they just look every week like, hey, this team should be beatable every single time, but they're going to come down to it. Yeah, you could talk about the refs. I guess I won't get fined with Aaron and two, but that became the defining stuff, commentary on the game on social media and everything across that, because, hey, there were some pretty game-changing penalties in these moments that are like, I just don't know if that's a call that anyone but Mahomes is getting right now. And it's hilarious. You can use the old, you know, Harvey Dent Dark Knight line where, you know.
I know where you're going.
Exactly. So, I mean, you either die a hero or live long enough to become the villain, because this was the team that everyone loved taking down the Patriots dynasty 5-6 years ago. And now, you know, America does not want the Chiefs to win because it is just, we're tired of Taylor Swift. We're tired of Mahomes getting the calls. We don't like the Kelseys are over stuff. Like, America now just hates this team, and they win games in like a fashion where they were just blowing people out. They're exciting, and the offense was up and down the field. And now it's just these like slugfests of just like, you know, up and down the field. They're not really, you know, doing anything from a yardage perspective. It's a lot of defense. It's kicking. They're not aesthetically pleasing. It's just like, this is a different team that started the Chiefs dynasty. And it's just a team to hate and root against now.
Any other thoughts on this game besides a missed opportunity from the Texans? All right. That's it, guys, huh?
I mean, you're the Chiefs guy here, Rome. I mean, I'm sure you got some stuff to say about it.
No, you know, just I got nothing else, man.
We forgot to add Caitlin Clark to the list of now.
I was going to talk about that, actually. I was a little disappointed that she was in the box because I'm a big Caitlin Clark fan. And there was somebody else in the box, too. I'm just like, it is what it is. Let's jump to the other side. Rams and Eagles. I was watching this with quite a lot of Rams fans. They were not happy that I was kind of cheering on the Eagles. I don't really like cheering for the Eagles. My friends that are Eagles fans, they are pretty obnoxious. I think they might be like one of the worst fans to be friends with. Besides Cowboy fans, they all happen to be all in the same division. Bears might be joining that group too soon. You know, we will see if we're getting a preview from Jason. They might be climbing up those rankings really fast, but there was
I'm going to be so unbearable next year. Just so unbearable.
I was actually surprised how close this game was. Saquon Barkley had a fucking game. 200 plus yards, 2 touchdowns, 20 plus carries. Jalen Hurts, pedestrian again, but he did have like that nasty hit. Whereas, what was the left leg or the right leg? His knee had the weird twist. He didn't look the same after that. When he was getting pressure, he could not move in or around the pocket. He actually took a couple sacks in the second half of the game that he typically does not take. I know that was really big for the Rams defense. Stafford, he comes in clutch, man. This guy's really seasoned, especially in the second half, brought them to life, gave everyone a good scare, especially on that final drive. But the Eagles were able to do enough early, especially early in the fourth quarter to win. Williams had a great game. Puka had a great game. It was a snow game. I love football snow games, man. That's like the epitome of like a football game for me. It's great. It kind of you're kind of forced to go in between the trenches. Every catch, you know, that's like bouncing in and out of the hands. Like that thing's a rock when it's that cold. I can't believe the field goal kicking converted in this game. Like I was just like, my foot hurt just watching on the Eagles. I think same thing with the Rams. He had a pretty good size field goal. I forgot what quarter it was, but fun game all around. Did you guys feel nervous about the Eagles losing it? How did you feel about the Rams? Any other takeaways?
Yeah, I was very, very surprised. We talked in the preview, you know, it being snow, you know, potential, and it was a lot, and it was like an ice snow too. So it wasn't even like a convenient, soft, fluffy snow. That was probably one of the more inconvenient types of weather you could get. Agree with you, Rome, aesthetically and stuff. This is where football's at. I had some people texting me as like, all games should be played inside, blah, 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 blah. Like, no, this is January football, like where it's at, not perfect conditions, you know, need to adjust your team and where it's at. And I think the deciding stuff probably was the weather. I mean, maybe this was an indicator of Notre Dame playing the national championship, but, you know, Kyren Williams had a pretty good game, but his fumble was really like the turning point in that game for the Rams, because at that point it's like, man, they just, you know, I don't want to say they look cold or anything like that, but the weather was becoming a factor. I know Kyren Williams has had some fumble problems throughout the season as is. I think the week prior, he had two that hit the ground, but the Rams recovered them. At this point, that was a crucial fumble where they were only down one, really put Philly in the driver's seat, getting a pretty easy field goal right after that. And then there was another fumble shortly after that with Stafford. So, I mean, that was like a big turning point where you felt like the weather was starting to come and play in favor the Eagles. And I think before that, like the Rams were there and you're like, man, this team in LA, you know, maybe there's some momentum behind LA with the fires and everything like that. This is kind of be a little bit of a team of destiny. But at the end, Saquon being the difference maker where he's at, you know, the Eagles for me had been, you know, we said top two in the NFC the entire year. So not surprised they're getting to this point, but I think it was a little shaky. I think the Rams, you know, Rams got better the entire year. You know, we look at that first month and we mentioned the season preview, you know, they were a week or two away from trading some key players and stuff, but they really stepped up. The defense got, you know, really good throughout the end of the year and they held steady early in this game and kept it competitive.
Yeah, I mean, weather definitely played a big part in this game. I think there's no snow and the weather's, you know, just cold, but no snow. I think the Rams probably pulled this one out. I mean, Jason said it. Those two turnovers, Kyren Williams and Stafford, I believe it was back-to-back possessions, really, really turned the game. And then Saquon breaking the big run like he's been doing all season.
So beautiful.
That was big. And then, Rome, you talked about it in the previous game and throughout, special teams. Elliott, who's making big kicks, then misses the extra point. The Rams late in the game, they're driving not only chance to tie but win because
of the
touchdown, they can kick the extra point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was a crazy game. Definitely, I mean, Philly was calling timeouts to basically clear snow so Elliott could kick those 45-yard field goals, and he was making them. I mean, like you, I was like, oh, geez, I don't know if you kick it here. Like, Sirianni's usually the
type. I thought he was crazy. I thought he was crazy going for it that far out.
Yeah, I did too. Considering he's missing extra points from 33 yards out. So, and he missed two in that game.
He missed one
on the first drive. So, critically, yeah. But, yeah, turnovers were the big difference. I mean, time of the possession was about the same. Rams got a few 50 more yards. But, yeah, weather was big. And then Jalen Carter coming up huge, huge. He had the strip there of Kyren Williams. He punched it out. Then the late sack on Stafford. Philly's defense came through, man. And if you're an Eagles fan, you were nervous there, man, because that sideline catch to Puka for 40 yards. I mean, my dad was texting me. He was like, hey, man, I think the Rams are going to pull this one out. He said he liked the Rams all day. I said, nah, they're going to get blown out. And here they kept fighting and fighting. Like Jason said, you know, maybe, you know, the spirit of L.A. behind him with all the wildfires. But that was a hell of a game. It was a really good game. I didn't think it was going to be that entertaining and that close, to be honest.
That was really great. When you look at all the stats, man, these teams are pretty much even. Rams dominated in the air by a big margin, 290 to 60, whereas the Eagles dominated on the ground, 280 to 111. Same yards per play, same amount of first downs, third down efficiency, fourth downs, total plays, sacks, punts, penalties. The fumbles were the big difference. Two fumbles, time of possession. It was, man, I'm really impressed by the Rams, man. Did not even see them making the playoffs, and they were knocking on another conference championship.
It speaks to Sean McVay, to be honest with you. And yeah, you know, he got a lot of praise, you know, as this young prodigy and what he did and finally winning the Super Bowl. the team was totally up against the cap, you know, post Super Bowl win, and really, you know, that's the judgment of, I think, great coaches. And I know Rome's not always, you know, happy about his guy Tomlin, but if you look at like Tomlin and, you know, John Harbaugh and Belichick over the years, like, you know, yeah, it's great to win the Super Bowls and stuff like that, but the real success is like in a league that is incentivized for parity, where teams are always getting better. The teams that are able to go through these transitional periods in their franchise when they lose guys and guys get old and go through, and they don't bottom out and turn into, you know, what the Bears and Raiders and Jaguars and, you know, all these other bad teams, like, you know, they have one good blip season, they go down. You know, this speaks to what, you know, great coaching can do, is identifying new talent, you know, getting better with the team. And that just, you know, this team was nowhere, and I think they were just coached up, you know, top to bottom to do better. And that speaks to really how great McVay is.
I would say a lot of people still thought this team was pretty loaded with talent. So,
I mean, they overcame talent, injuries. But, you know, we mentioned it early in the year why I didn't like the Rams. I mean, their whole offensive line was out basically the first month. Cooper got hurt. Puka got hurt. They were 1-4 and then finished the year 9-3.
Impressive.
With basically throw away the last game. I mean, they didn't play anybody against Seattle, so really finished 9-2. One of those losses being against these Eagles when Saquon rushed for 255 there at SoFi. So outside of the Eagles game, they lost another Monday nighter against Miami that was a shocker, in which, you know, the Dolphins had gotten hot with two and went on to win like four in a row. But yeah, the Rams, we'll see what Stafford does. I think Stafford's probably going to come back and play next year, but we'll see.
Yeah, it's 2 years left.
They'll probably front load all that money up front. But like Jason said, I mean, what McVay and the Rams did, they went all in, gave up capital, draft picks, everything to win a Super Bowl. They cashed in, and then they had a bad year, and then McVay's got those guys regrouped, and they're competitive again, and they're young on defense. They're only going to get better. You saw what Verse was doing, dominating.
Verse was really great in this game.
They got to get better at linebacker, but their D-line depth is good. Their secondary is good. And given that conference and division, the Rams with McVay, and if they have a quarterback, Stafford, whoever they get, they're always going to be players.
Most definitely. Let's jump to the upset of the century. I wouldn't go that far, but it was a pretty big upset. Commanders pull off a very convincing win, 45-31, against the Detroit Lions. My number one team all throughout the year in the power rankings, I believe for the majority of the year. Best team in the NFL, in my opinion. I would probably still put the Ravens at possibly the second best, top to bottom. But a lot of things happened here. Second quarter was amazing. It was really amazing. At the point where I kind of got scared, I'm thinking like, oh no, this is going to be one of those games, was when Detroit was driving the ball down the field. They're pretty close to scoring, I believe, their second touchdown. Goff gets sacked, fumble. It kind of changed the whole vibe of everything. And Washington comes back and has a really impressive long drive. They go up. It's a shootout from there on out, back and forth, back and forth. Jameson Williams with this phenomenal 61-yard run in the second quarter. I think that was probably my favorite play besides Sam Laporta's amazing catch, sneaking out in the back of the end zone on the right-hand side. This little sidewinder from Goff. Zach Ertz, I always forget that he is on Washington's team, and he just looks great, man. I really loved him on Philly, and he did an impressive job. But that fumble, though, for me, kind of just, it just felt bigger than what it was. Like, Washington was here to play. And Jaden Daniels, once again, a phenomenal game. Everyone's saying best rookie ever. Definitely a playoff performance. Almost 300 yards, two touchdowns. They made very little, if any, mistakes in this game. Read the defense is right. Even when he was about to get sacked, stepped out, stutter stepped, let his guys slightly get open. Even some of the deep throws where they said, you know, like that's like the best option, man, they were like right on the money, where like the defenders were all over the wide receivers, and they just, the ball landed right in the right spot at the right time, and they just kept on converting. Brian Robinson, he was money, 2 touchdowns. Gibbs was money. A few things. Obviously, Goff's turnovers were fucking costly, man. Some balls sailed uncharacteristically above some of the wide receivers. I really didn't think he saw one of the defenders on, I can't remember, I think it was midfield, and he threw on the left-hand side. There was like 3 defenders around, and it sailed over, and interception. That was bad, but I thought, you know, 9 times out of 10, he makes that. Some of the play calling, in my opinion, I'm kind of, when I was watching the game, and I watched this game again because I just wanted to make sure, you know. You got your guy, Jason. But I wonder if he was halfway thinking about the Bears job already and didn't put enough study into this game.
You're spending too much time on Lions Twitter.
No, not at all. Some of the play calling was a little weird. And
you're talking about the wide receiver pass. I thought the play calling was fine, man. They got over 500 yards of total offense. Don't put this loss on Ben Johnson. Just tell him, Jason,
I'm going to put a considerable amount of it on Ben Johnson.
Well, yeah. I mean, they scored 31 points and they gave up 45, but you're going to put it on the offensive coordinator. And if you watch any of the Lions games throughout the year, those type of plays are a staple of the Lions playbook. Now, the execution was very poor on the wide receiver reverse kind of screen. Like, that ball shouldn't have been thrown. But
it wasn't,
you know,
just that. It was also, you know, they got Montgomery back. Jahmyr Gibbs was unstoppable. I thought they could have ran the ball a little bit more, been more creative on that side. They were so prolific in the air. It's just, you know, it was just lacking in the second half.
I don't disagree on the running game aspect. So if your Chris says anything about the Lions on offense, yeah, I think Jahmyr Gibbs should have got the ball a lot more because I think that was a dynamic portion of the offense, especially where Goff was playing. And, you know, I texted my, you know, friends and stuff throughout the game. Like, when Goff was the Rams quarterback, I have a friend who's a Rams fan, and we'd always give him a hard time when Goff would blow up for the Rams, and it'd be like, hey, Goff's going to Goff. And he's at a certain point, you know, this is what, when he got, you know, basically pushed aside out of LA, these are the defining moments of Jared Goff a lot of time that kind of define where things are at. He's going to have a game where these turnovers are going to matter. And out of anything in this game, Goff having 3 interceptions, I think, and the fumble, so like 4 turnovers, like that was a massive portion of the reason that the Commanders able to take so much control. And whether play calling or not, you know, you can't have that many turnovers in a game where not always the turnover margin always matters, but in this game it was just so severe where, you know, the Commanders couldn't be stopped almost offensively. Aaron and I have been calling for this, the Lions defense being too beat up all year. I think it finally caught up to them. And if the offense is turning the ball over, you're really not going to have a chance. You're playing catch up.
Yeah, I mean, Rome, I think you're stretching a bit with the Ben Johnson. I mean, I put this loss on Jared Goff. He doesn't fumble the ball there. They get points. They're getting a field goal or a touchdown that drive. He throws a pick 6. You mentioned he throws it over the wide receiver into 3 guys. He had Sam Laporta wide open in the flat. They drew that play up. You know, even Tom Brady's like, look, dude, you got 8 yards to your tight end. You're getting greedy. No reason to do it. He throws another interception in the end zone when he has Williams open, but he throws it on the line drive instead over the defender. An ex-Michigan guy, rookie, undercuts it, intercepts it. Goff had a bad game, and he's had some bad games in the past this season. We mentioned coming in to Texans, 5 interceptions. They were able to overcome that. They weren't able to overcome this one. Daniels and them, they just couldn't stop them. The defense, like Jason said, we've been saying they've been banged up all year. They just couldn't get a 3-and-out. I don't even think they ever got a 3-and-out in this game. Did Washington even punt? I mean, I can't remember if they punted. So
I don't think so.
I think
they
just one or twice.
I think they just had a turnover.
No, I mean, I think the only time Washington didn't do anything is when they took a knee to go into the half.
No, they punted to start the second quarter.
Okay.
And they had a turnover on downs.
Okay. But, you know, if anything, I put the loss more so on Goff, and I put it on Aaron Glenn. They lost one of their starting corners on what, the 3rd play of the game. He broke his arm.
Yeah,
and they continue to stay with an aggressive game plan. Well, you play against Washington, I said, if you play against these quarterbacks can run, if you play man-to-man, you have no eyes on the quarterback. So the quarterback can run, he can extend plays, get out of the pocket and throw, or he can just run the ball and pick up first downs. You got to play a lot more conservative approach. I thought Detroit, I get it. This is who they are. They stuck to their guns and they went out that way. But,
admirably,
you know, Ben Johnson, the reverse for Williams, 61-yard run. They ran some kind of like, I can't even think of the play now, where they threw it back to the quarterback. He threw it back to the running back. That was a creative play.
That was kind of cool, yeah.
That was pretty cool. Yeah. So, I mean, like Jason said, this is what Ben Johnson does. He comes up with two or three trick plays. I did see some guys on Twitter saying, hey, I'm glad, you know, I believe it was your boy Nick Wright saying, I'm glad Ben Johnson got all the trick plays out of his book because now he doesn't have to worry about calling him the rest of the season. So,
Nick Wright. We'll get to Nick Wright one day. Just watched this Mahomes Mountain earlier today and kind of irked me. Yeah, you know, fair criticism. Glenn, same thing. Yeah, they were still pretty aggressive, and Daniels ate them up. Daniels, man, really impressive, dude. Really impressive. Two big victories in the playoffs to kind of start off his very, very young career. Has as many playoff wins as Dak Prescott. He's only 5 months in. Dak going to year 10. Is that what it is? It's hard to win in the NFL. I know Goff is going to get his criticisms. I feel like we're pretty hard on him. You know, you can say this about Jackson. Are we going to like say the same thing about him or, you know, every other quarterback? Aaron Rodgers, I don't think he's gotten his fair criticism for like, you know, only having one Super Bowl and having like a lot of, you know, duds and then in the playoffs. I think Goff has been pretty good, but bad time to have a bad game. That's for sure. Still high scoring. Commanders ended both halves, man, on fire. 28 points in the second quarter, 14 in the fourth to kind of shut things out. I'm trying to remember at what point did we know it was over? I thought once it got down to 10 points in the fourth quarter, I think it was like 38-28. I thought it was a little insurmountable at that point. It just kind of felt like Detroit had nothing left. They were out for the count.
Yeah, I think you were probably talking, I think it was Goff's second interception when they were only down 38-28 at that point, throws the interception. Washington goes down and score. They're up 45-28, and now we're just...
That was it. What was the timestamp in that?
Oh, I'm sorry, that wasn't Goff. That was actually the trick play interception. That was it. So that was...
He could have threw it out of bounds. They didn't practice out of that trick play.
Well, I mean, here's the thing with trick plays.
He could have ran out of bounds.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been a loss of a lot of yards. I mean, here's the thing. I mean, these guys, when they run these plays in practice, they look all great and good. So they want to run it in the game and throw it. And it was just a terrible
chance.
It was a terrible pass.
Had no chance.
It had no chance. It didn't. I mean, obviously, they don't get the interception there. Detroit maybe goes down, gets another field goal, touchdown. Maybe. Who knows?
Who knows? But that was a gut punch.
That one hurt. I mean,
I think I was texting you guys all surprised, but I wasn't surprised. I'm still surprised, although I'm not surprised. Thoughts on the Commanders?
I mean... You look at out of these final four teams, you know, this is probably one of the main teams making the playoffs that no one at the preseason would have thought they would have been here. They would have got better, but making the jump they've been at, you know, I will say I've been wrong about them pretty much the entire year. And you talked about Jaden Daniels. Yeah, I mean, this is the best rookie quarterback performance really ever. I think your boy Ben Roethlisberger make it to the AFC Championship game or something his rookie year, but that was on the defense. It's nothing like what Jaden Daniels is like.
He wasn't carrying offense by any means, no.
Yeah, so, I mean, Jaden's really carrying the team. I think the other thing is kind of, I don't know, other media outlets brought it up, but, like, for Cliff Kingsbury, you know, the difference between, you know, the Commanders hiring him and the Bears not for Jaden Daniels and Caleb Williams and what Kingsbury's been able to do to kind of tailor this offense around Jaden and play to his strengths and utilize the weapons they have. You know, it's been super impressive. throughout the entire season for the, you know, high scoring team. You know, the defense was okay, but kind of shaky. Like, you know, they gave up a lot of points this year in Washington for, you know, Dan Quinn and, you know, defense being his specialty. So, I mean, it's been an impressive run. I think this wasn't a victory that I definitely expected, because the Lions felt like they were ready to go to the NFC Championship game. It was going to be a Lions-Eagles kind of showdown where they were pretty much the whole year, I think, consensus 1 and 2 teams in the NFC. So I think where you're sitting at from a regular season standpoint, this is probably the Commanders are the shocking team to wind up in this Final Four.
Definitely, man. I mean, I didn't see the Commanders getting here. I mean, I'm not shocked, like you said, Rome, shocked, but not shocked that they won. More so shocked in the fashion that they did.
I think by the 14 points, yeah, that's like...
I mean, we talked about it. We kind of looked at each other when we were going over the Lions the week before. I'm like, why are they a 10-point underdog? I mean, we all kind of sat here and we're like, it feels like a 5-6 point, you know, should be a spread. We all liked the over. We knew it was going to be a shootout. That's what we got. But I was looking at it, I'm like, man, 10 points. I mean, I think Jason looked it up. I said, I don't think the Commanders have lost a game all season by double figures. And, you know, like we said, they're playing with house money. They got nothing to lose, right? I mean, sometimes when you're Detroit and you go from being the hunter to the hunted, it's a different mindset. It's a different feel. And they beat up on a Minnesota team that's not looking that great the last week of the season. This defense, weeks 12 through 17, was giving up almost 34 points a game. They look great against Sam Darnold and whatnot, but Sam Darnold's nothing close to Jaden Daniels. Like you guys said, he's the best rookie NFL quarterback probably ever to come in. Unanimous rookie of the year. I don't think there's going to be any doubt about that. And he's got a chance to get his team to the Super Bowl against, you know, division rival. So it's going to be exciting to see how this one finishes up.
Yeah, I didn't really like the quick recency bias on, you know, everyone in sports is so guilty about like, it's like the greatest rookie performance ever. You know, we were just saying that about Stroud last year. He had a pretty good run himself. Mark Sanchez had a pretty good run when he was with the Jets. That was pretty exciting. I still remember that.
It's an overreaction, but I struggle to say who's been better.
Yeah,
leading the team. That's where it's at. Like, Stroud was great in the regular season, but then it came against the Ravens in the playoffs last year, and it was a no-go. Like, they dominated, you know, that Texans team, but were...
Well, then to let them run the offense the way they let them even, you know, change the play calling right then and there. Did you guys see the story that came out about how he trains?
Just all the different things that he does with the virtual reality stuff or whatever,
with
like that.
LSU. I watched like this 10-minute clip. I think it was on X. I got sucked into this world of virtual reality, how they would basically load up all the plays that started in LSU, and they would run it at 1.5 speeds, up to 2 times the speed of what a normal gameplay would be. So you're still going through the motions mentally. You know, but you have to react a lot quicker. So by the time you see it in game action, it's half the speed than what you saw it in virtual reality. But you already saw those type of coverages. You already kind of saw those plays. So it's easier to identify those things. I'm a fucking firm believer that this is the difference between Jaden Daniels and everyone else. And he was adamant whoever drafted him had to continue that VR training, because that's what changed him from whatever it was him at ASU, whether Herm Edwards fumbled that bag or not. And what it became at LSU, pretty crazy.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of creativity. That makes a lot of sense, right? If you can speed the brain up and you get used to doing something quicker than what it is. I mean, if you actually watch Jaden Daniels play, and that's really the big difference between him and Caleb Williams, is the ability to process.
Yeah.
If you tell me from an athletic standpoint and arm talent, I say they're equal or not better Caleb arm talent-wise.
Caleb definitely has
but the
arm.
But the ability to process and read coverages and get from point A to B to C, Jaden's right now... much better.
Well, Caleb
that's
looks
gonna be,
like a good
that's gonna be the next
quarterback,
step for Caleb in his progression. And, you know, maybe Jason doesn't want to hear it, you know, Brian Kelly, next Notre Dame coach, but give him a lot of credit what he did with Jaden Daniels there at LSU. Guy knows how to develop talent. I'll say that.
For sure. All right. Are we done with that game? Should we talk about the final one?
Go for
the
it.
Main event.
All right. So, my Bills. Josh Allen.
Wait, your Bills know how many teams you got, dude? You went from Bengals to Steelers, now Bills? Yeah, man, you're worse than Colin Cowherd, bro.
Hey, man, go fuck yourself, dude. I like the Bills.
Why
like
is it
Josh
a shocker
Allen.
To you? Every like college Josh. Game, every college game he talked about was his team, whether it's Nebraska or Michigan or Texas.
I was hoping he left that at college, man, but now he's brought it over to the NFL. Look, he just jumped off the Lions and now the Bills? All right, I like it, dude. I like it. Bills, my team, too. Let's go.
I have not stopped talking about the Bills all year. I love them. Anyways, before you guys talk shit on me here, 27-25, really exciting game as well. Not as much snow. I think it was supposed to be a blizzard after the game. We got like a little bit of remnants, but it was still pretty icy. A few things, man. If you would have told me that Josh Allen only threw the ball for 127 yards, no touchdowns, James Cook just gets barely over 60 yards as well on the floor, on the ground. And they hold Derrick Henry under 100 yards for the game. I would have thought that Buffalo definitely loses. But I watched highlights on this game again, and the way Buffalo's defense stepped up for this game, man, was really impressive. Go ahead, Aaron. You want to say something?
No, man. I'm just pointing at there's three turnovers, man. Three turnovers in the
three
game.
Three turnovers.
That's all you got to know, man.
Three turnovers. I'll let you guys talk about the turnovers a little bit more. I thought they could have ran the ball more with Derrick Henry. Felt like they didn't really take advantage of that as much. Bills' defense were swarming, though. They were not giving Lamar a lot of time. And even when Lamar did have a lot of time, he looked great. Lamar's definitely, you know, top three, top four quarterback in the NFL. No doubt about that. Possibly MVP again. There's parts in this game that he looked great. Wasn't his best game, but still, you know, I'm not going to dock this loss on him. A couple big drops.
Mark Andrews.
Mark Andrews, man. I remember that play that they were running where he's, you know, peeling out on the right-hand side right around the goal line. It was the same thing that they ran against Pittsburgh, and he dropped the same pass, and he dropped it on this one. That's a hard turn to make. And in the cold with the snow, icy conditions, I wasn't a big fan of that play. It worked in our favor, though. Bills, when they were up by, what was it, 11 points, it was 21-10 in the half. I thought, like, this game's ours, dude. Didn't count the Ravens out by any means. They definitely came back and made it competitive. But even Bills only got two field goals after the half. Looks like they were just kind of burning the clock, controlling it. I know it was a two-point game, but it still felt like the Bills kind of, it felt like a 35-25 game to me. Thoughts on the game?
Yeah, at the turnover aspect of it, when you think about it with Lamar, and like those are the things that just can't happen. We just talked about it with Goff, and especially you go to a game like this. You know, I don't know how to describe this type of game, but like this is like the CBS game, man. Like you have these teams playing in the snow at that 3:30 time slot on a Sunday, man. This is the CBS of CBS games. And, you know, just a certain vibe and the way things were going with the game, just like it felt like even though it was close, everything was kind of going like the Bills' way. And yeah, like you said, like I wouldn't have realized the stats on Josh Allen or Cook or any of that unless you wouldn't have said it. But, you know, I don't want to say weather was the ultimate determining factor like it kind of was with the Eagles-Rams game. But, you know, when you talk about Andrews drop and a couple other things with that with the Ravens team, like, it just wasn't crisp, and the execution just wasn't there for a team that had been good all year. But we talked about it in the preview. Like, whatever team lost this game, it was going to be a huge disappointment to whichever quarterback that, you know, on the losing effort, because we're expecting one of these guys to make this leap past Mahomes and go to the Super Bowl. And so it was going to be an unsatisfying end to either one of these team seasons, especially for Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson. And unfortunately, Lamar, now this just carries him forward because he has the turnovers in the game. You know, they lose and he still can't get this kind of monkey off his back for, you know, make it doing what he does in the regular season in the playoffs.
Yeah, Lamar had a good game, but just costly mistakes. I mean, multiple turnovers. He threw, what, four interceptions all season, throws two in this game. Or one in this game and then has the fumble. Multiple turnovers. This is, I think, the third or fourth time he's done this in his playoff career, and the Ravens have lost all those games. I mean, you look at the stat line, you look at everything, and it's turnovers, like I said. The Ravens didn't punt this whole game, guys. They didn't punt. They didn't miss an extra point. They didn't miss a field goal. We talked about Tucker all year. He was money in this game.
He was.
And yet, they have three turnovers, and the Bills score, I believe, 10 points off all those turnovers. That was the big difference in the game. You mentioned Derrick Henry. You know, they kind of kept his carries down, but they even had Justice Hill come in. I mean, he got 50 yards rushing. I mean, I'm looking at the stats right now. They got 176 yards rushing on the ground, Baltimore.
They did. They did,
and they
yeah.
averaged, that's probably about what they averaged on the season, between 175 and 200. So if you look at the numbers, Baltimore did everything they did all year except one thing, turn the ball over a lot. They never do that. And that's kind of been their playoff MO, is like, hey, this team is the most talented team in the NFL up there, 1-2. You know, they should have beaten Buffalo. I mean, Buffalo didn't really do anything against them. I mean, 6 points in the second half. Mark Andrews doesn't fumble when they're getting ready to go down and score again. I mean, that was a killer, because then Buffalo got the ball and got a field goal. And then obviously the 2-point conversion drop, you know.
Should have touched on
between,
that.
Yeah, between Mark Andrews and Jared Goff, I don't know who had a worse weekend, but it hurts if you're a Ravens fan, because you're always like right there. I mean, you go back to the AFC Championship game last year, Zay Flowers is literally half a yard away, and they're probably going to beat the Chiefs. Let's just be real. They had the momentum. We're going to probably beat the Chiefs and go to the Super Bowl and likely win, because they already crushed the 49ers that year. So yeah. It's tough, man. It's tough if you're a Ravens fan, for sure.
They didn't have Zay Flowers, so that definitely hurt. But, yeah, if you look stats overall, Ravens dominated every category. Overall yardage, yards per play. They still got big plays. It was still a fun, exciting game. Bills it defense was. Clamped down when they needed to. They bend, but they didn't break.
Aaron, I ask you this. I want to think about Mark Andrews in this game. Between the fumble, the miscatch for the 2-point conversion, this guy is like, I don't know, is he like the leading receiver or touchdown person in like Ravens franchise history? But is there a moment here where Isaiah Likely is just going to take over and they're going to be wishing him farewell?
Well, I think Likely's kind of already taken over. Likely had a touchdown in this game, right? He caught that touchdown that led to the 2-point conversion play.
Yeah, that was a nice play.
Well, I think we talked about Mark Andrews, like the first 6 weeks or half of the season wasn't doing anything. Like, he wasn't involved in the offense at all. People that drafted him on those fantasy teams were like, dude, like, did I draft the wrong tight end? Because, there you go. Because Likely was killing it from week one.
Well, they had Andrews playing, like, left tackle at the start of the season.
So, if you're asking me where I think Andrews is going, I think he's going back to left tackle, and then he's going to be – because he also dropped another big play in that game or in the first half that would have continued to drive on a third down where it just went right through his hands. I mean, Mark Andrews had a great career. He's had some injuries the last few years, but Isaiah Likely is the future there. But the Ravens have always liked 2-3 tight end sets ever since Lamar's got there. They like to go big because, I mean, similar to what you see with Buffalo and even Detroit, you can have that extra tight end get in and you can do the play-action pass game and you can get big plays in the passing game in Rome. Like you said, not having Zay Flowers and still generate the offense they did, that's pretty impressive. But we're going to have to wait till next year to see if Baltimore can make that leap. I just don't trust them in big games. That's my thing with them.
Tough loss, but I think it was a loss that I think Jackson can at least live with. Like, you know, it's not going to tarnish his reputation, I think, too much. I think he still did pretty well. Wasn't a no-show. I think still, I don't know. I'm happy the Bills won.
Yeah, I mean, the fumble, that was just a weird play. Maybe it was because it was cold and just the ball was hard. But
I'm not going to put that on him.
I agree with you. I mean, not to punt the ball, lead him back. I mean, that play to Likely, that was kind of
that
really
was great.
You know, he sat in the pocket for, what, 10 seconds, just kind
like
of
10
moving
seconds.
Around.
Great protection.
And that's something where his game is developed and why I think he's probably a 3-time MVP, because Lamar in the past would force a throw or just take off running. He's become a great pocket passer, which is something I never thought we'd see out of Lamar, and that makes him more dangerous going forward.
Phenomenal.
Yeah, it's really hard to, you know, I already mentioned about the loser of this game was going to get roasted regardless, but with Lamar driving them down the field, putting them in a position to win that game, made the right throw in the 2-point conversion to tie the game. Like, honestly, even if Andrews catches that ball, I think Buffalo still had time on the clock to be able to get into a position to kick the field goal anyway. So, like, was it was it going to mean like as much even if Andrews caught that ball? I don't know. But, I mean, Lamar being able to orchestrate that comeback is what makes him, you know, the MVP and where he's at. It's just unfortunate circumstances. And, yeah, a turnover here, a turnover there, these big moments. Like, this is just, you know, you're waiting for him to kind of grab the reins from Mahomes. And now maybe it's going to be Josh Allen's ability to do that here. But, you know, it's just rough for a guy that, you know, is so talented. Like Aaron said, has only gotten better in the league where he's, I mean, he's almost near unstoppable between what he can do in the pocket and his ability to run.
Yeah, I believe there's a missed field goal too, right, from the Bills in this game. Was it missed or blocked?
I don't think the Bills had any missed field goals. I think both kickers are pretty money in this game. I mean, Tucker was. I mean, like Jason just said, it would have been a minute 33 left on the clock. I think Buffalo had all three timeouts, so they would have had a chance to go down and get a field goal. But if this game had gotten to overtime, given how Baltimore just dominated the second half, I think Buffalo would have been in trouble. But, yeah, we'll never know.
Yeah. Fun playoffs, man. All four games are great. They're fun, exciting in their own way. Something to take away. I'm pretty content with who's in the final four. You got Commanders against the Eagles. We can talk about that spread probably on another night. We'll talk about those games. But I like the Commanders' chance as well. That's going to be fun. I'm guessing a shootout. Or is it going to be snowing in Philly? Are we going to get some cold weather? Early outlook?
Great question. Let's look it up, what it is in Philly right now.
I don't think it's going to be as cold as it was this last weekend.
That's too bad, man.
Sunday, yeah, it's getting warmer leading up to Sunday. It'll be a high of 39, low of 25. No snow in the forecast.
Still cold as hell, but definitely doable. Still a lot more doable. And then Bills and Chiefs.
Probably about the same weather, I'd imagine. Ooh.
Yeah, old Kansas Bills. City, high of 33. No precipitation either, so.
I like Allen's chances there, too. It's going to be a fun couple games on Sunday.
Yeah, then we'll get in some previews, but I agree with you, Rome. I'm not claiming the Bills as my team in this, but I if I have a rooting interest, I mean, I think the fans of Buffalo are amazing, and you know they probably richly deserve the run they can get out of this team, and Josh Allen's just been awesome. You know, I think if you're asking America, like it's probably 49 states versus one against the Chiefs if you're doing a doing an electoral old sports nation pick on who's picking this, the AFC championship stuff. I think America's behind the Bills on this one.
Well, probably 48 states. Is it Kansas City? Because it rides between two states, right? You got Missouri and Kansas.
Between Kansas and Missouri. So
yeah, kind of weird. Nah, good stuff, guys. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back and talk about the new Big Man on Campus at Soldier Field. Jason is ecstatic, as is every other Chicago Bears fan, with the hiring of Ben Johnson, former offensive coordinator of the Detroit Lions. That set a record-breaking numbers in Detroit this past season. Really impressive offense. And depends on what side of the Twitter universe you're on. You're either really happy as well, or you're not happy, you know, because allegedly he had a full staff already lined up before even taking that second interview Monday and then accepting the job hours later. Lots of things coming out about him being hired. You know, his personality, no one really knows about him. Looked kind of weird. You know, like that video when he's walking to the offices. Whatever, man. Let's get into it. Jason, congratulations. You got your man. You've been talking about it all fucking year. We have many clips, hundreds of clips of you talking. Ben Johnson or nothing. You got your offense guy for Caleb Williams. Where do they go from here?
To the Super Bowl, obviously. No, yeah, I talked about it all year at nauseam because a year ago when we were going, you know, not deciding to part with Eberflus, this was the hottest guy in the market, and he pulls his hat out of the ring and wants to return back to Detroit, had some unfinished business, didn't get any farther with it, but you know, but felt he needed another year in Detroit as some unfinished business. But he even talked about in his press conference today that, you know, he needed to, like, sit back, reflect, and learn some things on, like, his approach would be as, like, a play calling, like, head coach. And I think he got a lot of answers within himself of, like, what he would want. And I think he was – you don't get that very often with only 32 of these type of jobs in the league where a guy really pulls himself out of the ring of getting a head coach. Usually people just want that next promotion, they're going to go. And he was very reflective and very specific and picky about which job he want. For the Bears, in my lifetime, Aaron and I were talking about this before, this is probably their best hire ever. People have brought up Dave Wanstead back in the early 90s, or you're talking Mike Ditka, you know, just Bears lore from a head coaching perspective. But the last, you know, three decades of Bears coaching hires have all been various levels of disappointment. Like Lovie Smith, most successful coach probably in, you know, the recent history, like a successful run against the Packers, took the Bears to the Super Bowl. Like that was probably the best team of the last 30 years that the Bears have had. But uninspiring head coaching hires, if you talk for the George McCaskey era, which is around that 2011 time when they fired Lovie Smith after a 10-6 season. So over, you know, whether it was, you know, John Fox and Eberflus and Nagy and all these guys, you know, it just, they were never getting the guy. It was always these weird, you know, they're hiring a CFL head coach or a retread NFL head coach or the offensive coordinator that doesn't even call the plays in Kansas City or a defensive coordinator that was potentially going to get fired. But of course, they hired him as the head coach of the Bears. Like Ben Johnson was the hottest free agent on the market. I think everyone in Chicago is holding their breath because do the Bears have what it takes to get the deal done? You know, many signs to me pointed that this was their guy. I think the tipping point, I mean, may or may have talked about the podcast, was like when it leaked out that the Bears had reached out to the Steelers about Tomlin, I was like, okay, Tomlin's a very expensive head coach. All right, money's not going to be an issue. They're gonna pay for Ben Johnson if that's what we require, because this guy was, you know, Ben was apparently asking for a lot. And you invested everything in the number one overall pick with Caleb Williams. This is a quarterback-driven league. Ben Johnson talked about it in his press conference today. Like, the way the quarterback plays is the biggest determining factor in winning ball games, even more so than the turnover battle, it was Ben Johnson's quote within these games. So you got the guy that's going to be able to turn it around, and the Bears went out. This was the guy that Ryan Poles wanted. You know, great to see in the press conference that Poles and Ben Johnson are kind of lockstep with each other, because that was a lot of the rumors. Like, Ben Johnson didn't want Ryan Poles or this and that. It seems like the right fit. You mentioned, what did you say? It was awkward, Ben Johnson walking around. I mean, to me, the guy addressed, you know, the staff, and in the press conference today, he had all the attributes of the leader of men stuff that they wanted. The players seemed uber excited about it. You had Caleb Williams. You had DJ Moore, who was allegedly on a family vacation and came off that vacation to come to this press conference today. Cole Kmet was there. Like, the leadership and the core that the Bears had was excited about this move. If you look at Jawan Brisker, he's very active on Twitter. He was psyched about the hire and everything about it. So, Amon-Ra St. Brown and I think his brother have a podcast. They had Caleb Williams on about a week ago, and they were kind of talking about Ben on that and what, you know, what he would potentially be for the Bears. And Caleb was basically kind of more or less alluding that this is the guy he wanted to. And you could tell the relationship Ben Johnson had with Amon-Ra, that he's a player's guy and he gets it and the players like him. So there's a ton of leadership capability there that I think that's what the Bears need, but also the offensive innovation. And to me, he nailed the press conference today. The Bears are the king of the offseason, so that might be saying much. But, you know, as Ben Johnson talked through this stuff, like, hey, he's got a very specific scheme within Detroit. But he said, hey, I'm not having my scheme match the player, or I'm not having the players fit into my scheme. I'm going to make whatever scheme we decide to go with match what Caleb Williams and what the weapons around Caleb does well. And to me, that's the maturity and knowing of a head coach of what he has, what he has to work with, and he'll build something around it. I think it's the start of something special within Chicago. You know, I can go overreaction right now, but hey, the Lions, they're only getting worse. They're going to lose both their coordinators. The Vikings overachieved all year. The Packers, now say, the Packers got a young team. They got a great head coach too, but I think this puts the Bears into another conversation. the staff, I think, will be key. You talked about Ben Johnson already had some stuff in the fire. Hey, Dennis Allen, if he's really the Bears defensive coordinator, cool. He's bringing a guy in who has head coaching experience, is one of the best defensive play callers in the league. Great that you're locked to step on what the defensive side of the ball is going to be. And then there's other rumblings on who potentially Ben Johnson's offensive coordinator, offensive line coach is going to be. So I think there's a very specific plan for what this team has to offer. And I think based on what is said, Ben Johnson and Ryan Poles will have that collaboration and know exactly what they need to do in the offseason to make this team better.
Yeah, man, it's a lot to digest there. But I think it's a great hire for the Bears.
Did I go longer than 2 minutes? Was it longer than 2 minutes? Okay, all right.
Let's see where the timer's at right now.
Rome didn't cut me off.
About five plus.
All right, five plus.
That's decent. Decent amount of time. No, man, I think Jason said it best. I mean, this was a great hire, I think, for the Bears right now. Ben Johnson's the guy. They need to bring him in. I like what they're doing with the staff. Dennis Allen, DC, likely. They're likely bringing over the interim coach that was the special teams coordinator there for the Saints, too. He's likely going to take over. So whoever they bring in as offensive coordinator, I mean, Ben Johnson's going to be, you know, calling the plays, I'm assuming. And they're going to have the same, like Jason said, he's going to make an offense work with what players and personnel they have, not just pin in the system and scheme. And I think that's a good leadership and coach quality of a good, offensive coordinator, head coach. You know, for Ben Johnson, what side of the pendulum is he going to go? Is he going to land on the McVay tree where he just, you know, is one of these young guys, offensive coordinator, tears it up? Or is he going to end up like an Adam Gase where, like, he was the hot name, failed to do anything, and just kind of ran himself out of the league? I think Ben Johnson's a smart guy. Obviously, he knows what he's doing. He knows how to run offenses. The Bears need somebody like this. I'm excited for where they're at. You know, we talked about the teams already in there. Caleb Williams, where's he going to be as a quarterback? Potentially, he may be the best quarterback in that division. You know, you got the Packers, their team, Matt LaFleur. He's probably the best coach. But, you know, Maybe the worst head coach in that division now is Dan Campbell. Let's just be honest. We're going to find out how that works out. But he may have the worst quarterback going forward, too, in that division. So that's a real tough division, depending on what J.J. McCarthy becomes. So the Lions window, it's closing rapidly with Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn out the door as quick as the Commanders whip their ass on Sunday.
You guys
Rome,
are high
go for
as
it,
fuck.
Man. Rome, we just slapped you so hard. You look like you got knocked out. So we'll give you a 10 count to get up, bro.
You guys are high as hell. I think the Lions are going to be fine. I think they're going to retool just fine. Campbell has obviously, he's building something special there. So I think you guys are full of shit. But great hire. We'll see how it goes. Tough division to turn around in. It's not the best division in football. We know that. That goes to the NFC East with two of their teams in the conference championship. But I think let's do some early predictions here. Bears had 5 wins this year, right? 5-12?
Yep.
You did have them winning more than 10 games this past year. I said they'd be lucky if they got to 8. No, I think I had them at 9. I think you had them at 11. Was that it?
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that. What do you think they do next year? Way too early predictions right now. What is the ranking of the division since you guys are so down on the Detroit Lions? What's that going to look like? And we're bookmarking this. This could be a cold take. Is this a cold take?
It could be.
It could be.
It's tough because it's what are these teams going to be doing in the offseason and the pieces we're at. So, I mean, if you're talking about projecting out, like, hey, the Vikings, they're going to regress, you know. Tough to duplicate what they did this season.
For sure.
Lions, like you said, they're building something special. They are, and they're going to get pieces in the defense back. But, you know, when teams lose both their coordinators, that's a big deal. Like, and they had a, you know, what they did in the regular season, there's a little regression there. The Packers, they were pretty hurt all year. So the Packers potentially could be better. And I think the Bears are better. So, I mean, now you're talking about two of the top teams regressing, two of the third and fourth teams getting better. Hey, is this whole division going to be around, like, 9 and 10 wins if some of these like splits within the division are a lot tighter? So I don't know. You all, what do you want me to say, Rome? The Bears are gonna win 10 games next year. Okay, yeah. That I would probably put him down for winning 10 games, but it really does depend what they get in free agency. Like, you know, is it Trey Smith from Kansas City is potentially saying he's going to be a free agent. One of the big guards or something from Kansas City is going to be out there. And like that, the Bears Twitter is already going crazy about that. The Bears got to address the offensive line. They already know that. So there's going to be some investment there. There's a ton of talk on the pairing in the backfield from a running back perspective. If you have, you know, do you need a Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery thing? So you got a Swift. Do Genty's getting a lot of pub as the Bears taking him, you know, early in the draft. I think that's probably be a mistake. I think they need the line help better. But, you know, what are the teams doing in the draft in the offseason, I think will be, you know, the biggest red flags. But I'll tell you, Rome, I think you'll see Packers, Bears, you know, in some order 1-2 in the division, if that's what you want me to say.
Packers number one?
I think the Packers have the leg up right now. Yes. But I say the Bears be second. I think the Vikings are last next year.
Here, I'll write this down. Packers one, Bears two,
Lions so three,
Lions three,
Vikings four.
Okay. I mean, that pecking order is pretty much what I've got. I think Green Bay. Yeah, I mean Green Bay. Like Jason said, they were banged up. They've got the best coach in the division. That's, I think, a proven right now. We'll see what Ben Johnson becomes. The Vikings, they're going to take a step back. They're not going to win 14 games, especially if they come back with... my guess is they're going to move off Darnold, but we'll see.
Yeah.
J.J. McCarthy comes in.
It sounded like they were moving off based on the way they were talking right after the game.
When they were playing the Rams, they mentioned 6 of their 7 defensive backs are all free agents this year. So let's see who they bring back in that group to replace or keep to add to Brian Flores' defense. The Lions, they're not going to win 15 games. They just lost both coordinators. That's going to be tough to replace. They just lost their main D-line coach, who now is going to the Patriots as their defensive coordinator. That's a lot of good coaches to lose. So, I mean, even if they go from 15 wins to, say, 11 or 12.
That's what I have, Matt.
We'll see. If I had to rank the division, I'd say 1, Packers. I give a slight edge to the Lions at 2. Bears 3, Vikings 4, but I think the Lions and Bears, depending on how things play out, might be interchangeable.
So you got the Vikings last as well?
Yeah.
Oof. Yeah, I still have Lions first. I got them probably like at a 11 to 12 win rate. I got Packers number 2.
You got to remember this is at like 1 a.m. in late January. So this
late
is like
January.
This is a way
no worries,
late.
Man, no worries. But the other two, though.
He just wants something to hold us accountable to. And if we're actually right, this will never hear the light of day. We're never going to hear about this
those
again.
Those notes will be lost, dude. Those notes will be lost. So gone.
I got it right here in black ink.
Yeah. You got the legal pad or what?
Yeah, of course.
There you go, man. I'm glad I...
I've always done, but I use white legal pads. The yellow. I can't read on the yellow legal pads. Do they just hurt my ears? My ears, my eyes. It is 1 a.m. But
the yellow legal pads where Eric gives his top college games of the week, which are basically just free money that he's giving out to all the listeners and viewers on X.
But outside of like Lions 1, Packers 2, I don't know which way. It depends on what happens with the Vikings. Are they like
I think
a
it's
nine,
potentially
9-win team, we know, with McCarthy, more than likely. You know, if they keep everybody else in place.
I mean,
and
it's
Bears,
potentially
I
every team
them.
Over 500 in that division, I think, next year.
Bears should be above 500 next time, or at least, you know.
But
at least
yeah, I agree with Jason. They definitely, that first round pick or whatever they do, Trey Smith would be a nice pickup addition from Kansas City at guard. They need to improve the offensive line. I think their running backs are fine. Just get a more creative play caller and an offensive line to go with it. And I think Swift and those guys would be okay.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about some other hires. Glenn going to the Jets. I think it's pretty nice. He was pretty legendary as a player during his time in the 90s there. I think he's the second Jets player to ever coach that team or turn into a coach. People are kind of liking it. It's a good fit. It's going to make a difference. Like it really does matter, though, who he hires as his coordinators. How do you guys like that fit?
I mean, they had a roster, and that defensively under Saleh, like, they were great. And that was one of the biggest criticisms of how early they fired Saleh, that they had some pieces there from a defense. The question around this, and I criticized the Bears for this in the past, like, okay, they hired the coach, but they don't have a GM. So how's that going to work as far as, okay, now the owners got to hire this
GM
guy's
firings this offseason.
Yeah, so they hire this guy's boss. What's going to be the alignment between those two? You know, Eric Glenn did a great job in Detroit. I mean, just like Ben Johnson on the defensive side of the ball, like, he had a lot to overcome this year from an injury standpoint on that defense. And, you know, when every week, you know, myself or Aaron were calling for, hey, this is going to be the week they're just not going to have the horses. Like, that ending against Minnesota, where that defense just put a clamp down on Minnesota, and Sam Darnold still hasn't recovered from, you know, what happened in that game. So, I mean, he's done a great job. I mean, for the Jets, the unappealing part about the Jets' job is, okay, what's your quarterback situation like? You know, probably not bringing Rodgers back is my assumption. And then, you know, what are you going to be doing going forward from a quarterback? You know, quarterback-driven league, they don't have an answer. That'll be the biggest, you know, offseason question after they hire this GM is, what are they going to do to solve that problem? Like, there's options potentially out there, but I don't know if you're bringing Sam Darnold back for another tour with the Jets, and you're not bringing Rodgers back. Like, so, and then, you know, there is,
yeah,
some,
I think,
talent.
Russell Wilson ends up there. I like this weird inkling about it.
Could be, because I think Rodgers is going to your Steelers. So, but
makes,
I mean,
a lot
for
of
Aaron
sense.
Glenn, I think it's a good hire. I think, you know, Glenn was rumored between this job and the Saints job, which he played for both of those teams.
Yeah.
And I mean, are they under really similar circumstances? I mean, I guess kind of the Saints have more of a quarterback answer with Carr, but
do they?
It's not. Yeah, it's the same thing as, do they? It's not like a long term stuff. So I think that it's a little bit of a rebuilding project that I don't know the foundation and directionally where they want to go. And I think whatever GM that the Jets do hire, you know, that'll be the assessment and sitting down with Aaron Glenn of, like, hey, what are the great pieces they have on defense? You know, they got some good pieces on offense too. Like, if the cupboard's not particularly bare there, but not having the quarterback figured out, you know, that's just really been where the Jets, the entire almost Saleh era was like, hey, we got this really good defense, we got some pieces on offense, but we don't have the right guy at quarterback to really move the needle to be, you know, something better than a 500 team.
Yeah, I'm really curious who he hires as his OC. And who else he brings along, because the Jets are still a loaded roster. If they can just tighten up a few things here and there, that's definitely a 10-win team, playoff contention. But, you know, we've been saying about the Jets for a while.
Yeah,
Vrabel. Okay.
No, I was going to say the last thing about the Jets from the general manager, I think they've only conducted one in-person interview, and it was a former Lions executive that was in there too. So, you know, something that's probably familiar with Glenn and something there. So it could be, you know, a fit for somebody he already knows is getting into that GM job.
Possibly.
Yeah, I think you have to probably bring in somebody he's familiar with as a GM. You don't want that tension in the room if you bring in somebody that has kind of a different vision.
Oh, definitely not.
You know, I'm happy for Aaron Glenn that he got a job. I mean, I think he was either going to get the job here with the Jets or the Saints. The Saints were setting up a second in-person interview, but that got snowed out, so the Jets just jumped on it and took him.
What makes the Jets a bad job is their owner.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of bad owners in this league. So
I don't know, man. They got some good young kids, like 13-year-old, 15-year-olds running that franchise over there, you know?
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously Aaron Glenn's coaching Madden rating was on the chart, looking up, trending up.
That's
for me,
not a
I think
good
it's
going
to be important who his coordinators are. I'm hearing Steve Wilks, the ex-Cardinal 49er defensive coordinator, possibly joining the staff, maybe taking over the defense there. Who's going to run the offense? Who's going to run the quarterback? They've got talent there. For the Jets, for me, again, you go from Robert Saleh, defensive guy, to Aaron Glenn, a defensive guy.
Yeah.
Personally, I think Saleh's a better coach than Glenn. I think his defenses over time have been better than Aaron Glenn's. We'll see how that...
Oh, Saleh's great on defense.
So, you know, they don't have a quarterback, so they didn't need to hire an offensive guy per se right now, depending on what they do. Russell Wilson, I like that to the Jets, Rome. I think you should write that down, because if you're right on that, you'll be highlighting that every day for fucking the next year. So put that in your notes.
What do you guys think about the Vrabel stuff so far? I'm kind of liking the moves he's making with the Pats.
I agree. I like it. McDaniels and a young guy for DC.
Yeah.
They need some fresh blood in New England, so I like it.
Yeah.
I think it fits the culture of what they're trying to build there. I think this was the right move that Gerard Mayo was not for them. They got the quarterback in place there in New England, so I think they have something to build upon, and Vrabel will get, you know, find the right pieces of kind of what he does, man. Like, watching him with those Titans games, it wasn't always the most aesthetically pleasing football to watch, but they won a lot of football games, and I think that's, you know, where how you turn this Patriots team that's been dormant for a couple of years since Brady left into, you know, something that's more competitive within that division. And I mean, you got a strong Bills team, but then you got a Jets team in turmoil. You got a Dolphins team that doesn't know their identity or whatever's going on over there. So there is an opening for the Patriots right now to make a mark in the AFC East.
The way early predictions, Dolphins drown. McDaniels is out after next year. Pats are going to be on the up. You imagine they might double up
Pats
their win percentage.
Won, what, three games this year?
They'll get to at least 6-7.
I think 6 or 7 is a real possibility.
Jets.
You got to get some talent on the offense, but yeah.
Yeah. Jets, we'll see. They always have the talent to be a 10-11 win team, but they're putting it all together. Coaching does matter in the NFL. And yeah, Dolphins are in trouble, man. That window might have closed. Any other hirings, or we're still kind of waiting, huh?
Yeah, I think you had, I mean, we talked to the Jags. Aaron and I were chatting over text day that they had fired GM Trent Baalke, which was just crazy to me. And Aaron and I were just both agreeing on this. Like, this was rumored a couple of weeks ago. I think we brought up, it was the Ben Johnson conversation,
yeah,
whether if he didn't vibe with Baalke, like, and the owner was talking about firing the GM so he can make way of the head coach. Like, if you're going to make this move, you should have done it so you at least could have landed potentially the right head coach. And Aaron mentioned, I think, Liam Cohen pulling his hat out of the ring for that and not liking what is. And, like, I think this is kind of spot on what you've seen from the Jags ownership, you know, through, you know, them hiring Urban Meyer and the mess that was, you know, getting into Doug Peterson and that not working out. And now you're keeping the GM, but at the start of the coaching shirts, but now firing him. And he's been kind of like, you know, for almost 2-3 weeks now, it's been like this teeter-totter whether he was going to keep a job. Like, you're not setting yourself up for success to get the right candidate in there. And this is a pretty crucial time for them with Trevor Lawrence. They just signed him to a pretty significant contract. You got some good pieces. You know, Brian Thomas was a great draft pick last year, and there's some other good parts about that team. This was a playoff team over a year ago that was, you know, kind of right on the expectations to take their next step, and it was a big step off a cliff. But it just doesn't seem like, overall, from an ownership standpoint with Shad Khan and what they're doing over there, that this is a pretty huge mistake in this kind of coaching search when there's a lot of good candidates still out there. I mean, you know, Mike McCarthy's still floating out there, who was hot on a lot of people's table too. And I don't even know where the Jags are going at this moment.
Yeah, that's basically it.
Yeah, I mean, the Jacksonville, I mean, who knows where direction they go. I mean, Trent Baalke, you know, there's been bad vibes about him ever since he got rid of Harbaugh in the 49ers 10 years ago.
That's what made me stop rooting for them.
4 years into that tenure, three, you know, NFC championships, a Super Bowl appearance, fourth year they go 500. Harbaugh didn't like him. Trent got rid of him. The 49ers went downhill. Luckily, they got Lynch and Kyle Shanahan in there.
Eventually.
So,
it took, like, what, 6-7 years?
Yeah.
8 years?
So, and then he kind of basically fell into the scouting department of the Jaguars and an assistant, and then just kind of moved his way up, selected Trevor Lawrence, passed on Aiden Hutchinson when they had a chance to draft him.
Yeah.
So,
it's crazy, you know, just what, a couple years ago, they're pulling off a big victory in the wild card over the Chargers. Things are looking up, and then they have a complete meltdown, what, last year or the year before, missed the playoffs, then
last year they were 8-3. Did not make the playoffs. They had, what, 97% chance to make the playoffs, I think, at the time.
Game losing streak, yeah, it was bad.
I mean, like Jason said, there's a lot of talent there. Yeah. I mean, they've got the tight end, they got running backs, their O-line, D-line, they're all young. They're talented, and that division's, it's winnable. I mean, it's kind of like rotates division winners quite often. So we'll see who gets the coaching job there. Like we said, Liam Cohen pulling out. I think it's a name I was said to keep an eye on. I don't know if he was going to get hired this cycle or not, but if Joe Brady happens to get the Bills to the Super Bowl, I think he likely gets a head coaching gig if he gets that far. Maybe if they don't, but he will be on somebody's radar getting a job this time next year, I believe, for sure.
Who?
Joe Brady, OC for the Bills.
Yeah, I hope not.
I mean, he's gotten a lot of praise. I mean, what he did, you know, down in LSU, you know, that was pretty much the greatest offense of college football history. I mean, they had some of the best players in college football history.
They were loaded. That was a loaded team.
Loaded team. But, I mean, you know, done a great job with Josh Allen. I think, you know, it's funny listening to interviews of these current teams. I talked about Amon-Ra talking about Ben Johnson, but there was stuff out there with Josh Allen talking about Joe Brady, basically saying, like, yeah, I go around telling everyone this guy's trash. He did nothing to help us out or anything like that. So I think you could tell, like, the respect a lot of those players have. I'm very curious on the Raiders if Joe Brady's an option for them, too, because, you know, they were, you know, Tom Brady allegedly was, you know, talking up Ben Johnson, you know, into the intro or right after this game or whatever to try to get him to go, you know, to the Raiders. So is Joe Brady an opportunity there? I know that Liam Cohen basically said he's going back to the Bucs, but I was kind of surprised that he wasn't going to be in consideration for the Raiders job, given, you know, his connection with Tampa and Brady's connection with Tampa and everything over there too. So I think the Raiders opening is pretty interesting on what they're trying to do over there.
Yeah, I think when you were in freeze mode there, we talked about it since the Raiders just hired an executive to be the GM there from Tampa. I think Liam Cohen's name gets back in the mix. I know he signed the extension, got a raise. You know, what they're going to do too at quarterback, but the Raiders seem to be putting things together. Brady kind of running a more kind of Patriots kind of organization, more organized. So I think the Raiders are going to be interesting to see who they hire.
Congrats, Jason. Ben Johnson, Chicago Bears. We'll see how many more dominoes fall as the next week progresses. We'll be back.